Fighters, before we get started with today's show, I want to get the word out that the Contractor Fight is hiring a couple positions right now. We're on the hunt for a content manager who can really take the bull by the horns in the Contractor Fight and rally the team onto a great plan to continue world fucking domination in the fight. So if you know somebody who would fit that position really well, since you know our brand, you listen to what we're doing and stuff like that here in the fight, maybe you know somebody, have them send an email to help@thecontractorfight.com. And in the subject line, put content, and then we'll know what that is. And we're also hiring a social media intern. And that person needs to be based in Colorado Springs, and ideally somebody who just wakes up and eats and sleeps and breathes social media. They really want to get started in, you know, a career in social media marketing. And it is a 4-month internship followed up by, if that person kicks ass, they will be offered a full-time position in the fight. So anyway, I just wanted to get the word out with that. If you happen to know anybody, we want to hear from them. They can send an email to helpthecontractorfight.com and the subject line social media. Appreciate you guys. You rock. All right, fighters. Today, I have back to the show Todd DeWalt. He is the host of the Construction Leading Edge podcast. And today, I think we take a unique approach to profit bleeds and how to eliminate them in your business, and really how to rally your people, be a better leader. And that's really the root of this whole profit bleed stuff. So anyway, check out this interview with Todd and hit the show notes. There's a link in the description. There's a resource that Todd gives you, especially for those of you that are remodelers and builders and things like that, home builders, to get paid for all the pre-construction work that you do. He's got a resource for you there. All right. So anyway, appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening. And here's the interview with Todd. Todd, welcome back to the fight, man.
Good to be here. Thanks, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you. So before we hit record, you were sharing how you're about to celebrate your 25th wedding anniversary. So congratulations publicly. That's a lot of good years, a lot of grinding through probably some tough times. And I think anyone that's been married that long can agree, but congrats to you, man. That's really cool.
Thanks. I'm just grateful for women who have low expectations, especially one. Low expectations, willing to take on a project.
And yeah, there you go.
I think I'm starting to figure stuff out. You know, the first 20 years, man, I was dumb. But I think I'm finally starting to figure some stuff out. We'll see.
All right, so let's do this. Since we're talking about that, I'm going to put you on the spot now, because I know how you love to be put on the spot. There's a young man listening to this podcast who's either a young married guy, he's about to get married. What advice do you give him? Or shit, he might be married 18 years and needs the advice. I don't know.
Yeah, so let's see. A couple of things that come to mind. I'm a problem solver, right? That's what I've done for the last 25 years. But that doesn't work well with wives. So what you got to learn, one thing that took me too long to understand is there are solving conversations, and then there are sharing conversations. And you're going to be a lot happier, and she's going to be a lot happier if you figure out, as soon as she starts talking, is this the sharing conversation where she just wants to talk about feelings, and or is this a solving conversation where she wants help? And there's a 90% chance it's just a sharing conversation. So avoid the temptation to jump in and say, well, all you got to do is this, and here's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. And I heard these words come out of my mouth once early in marriage. I don't know where they came from, but my wife, who was a teacher, she came home and she was talking about something or the other that was going on at school, and she was frustrated about something. And for some reason, I said, wow, how did that make you feel? And we just kind of stared at each other. And she took a deep breath and blew her mind. I'm like, man, that was gold. I got to remember that. So remember that. Down,
man. Yeah.
How did that make you feel? And that would have helped me out a lot.
There you go. So it's not like, hey, so let's get this thing fixed. Okay.
What do you need? So, all right, coaching. My wife tells me, listen, I'm not one of your coaching clients. All right. I don't need you to solve this. We don't have an execution plan.
Yeah.
They just want to talk about stuff, which seems crazy to you maybe, but believe it or not, you probably do the same thing too. But sometimes the best thing you can do is just ask questions, and they'll kind of sort it out themselves.
That's actually great advice, because far too often, I mean, seriously, like in most relationships, guys are like, why'd you bring it up if you didn't want it fixed? Like, you know, I mean, that's just how we operate mostly. So I've found that, so in sales and stuff, there's a technique called mirroring, right? Where you repeat the last 1 to 3 words somebody says, right? To get them to open up more. Well, she's been to our sales training things, my fiance, and this and that. So it's funny when she says something and I'll be like, you know, she said something like she was really angry. And I said, really angry? And she looks at me, she goes, don't you start that shit with me. I know what you're doing.
So this is important. This is important advice right here. So if you can either use your techniques with your significant other, or you can use them on her, or you can talk to her about it, but you can't do both, because my wife's like, don't you try to use that psychological mumbo jumbo bullshit on me. Like, I know what you're doing. Like, don't, it seems like you're upset. Don't use that labeling stuff. You already told me about that. Like, don't mirror. Yeah. Like, I get it. So you can either talk to her about it, or you can use it on her. Mm-hmm. She can't do both.
You know, it's funny, and this is a very real thing, is you and I pretty much all day, every day, we coach people. People come to us for answers. They ask us questions. We're getting DMs and emails, and we're on phone calls, and you come on a show like this and we interview you because we want to hear what the hell you have to say and all this other stuff. And there are times now in our relationship where she'll be sharing something with me. We're pretty dialed in with this now, is I will go, she'll go, well, what are you thinking? She'll ask me like what I'm thinking after she shares something. And I go, well, I'm having a really hard time not being coach right now. So I don't know what you need from me right now, because I don't want to coach you. I literally say those words, and she's like, just listen to me. We're good. Or now she also will start conversations with me where she'll be venting about something and she can tell that I'm like, whatever. And she'll put her hand up. She goes, I just need to talk about it. You don't have to fix me. We're good. You know? So we actually have a very open dialogue with stuff like that, which is, and for those guys listening, if you don't know what to do, ask. Like, honey, what do you need from me right now? I want to be in what you need me to be right now. And so I'm probably kind of clueless at this, at what you need. What can I do?
Yeah.
Most times it'll be nothing. They'll go nothing.
You know, and I've even found sometimes with, even on the business side, people, when I talk to people, one of the things I learned early on, a big mistake I made when I was coaching people was I was talking too much. I wasn't using enough question marks. So what I found is that the more questions I can ask, and this will help in business. This will make you a ninja level conversationalist. It'll help you with your relationships, is just ask questions. You don't have to be the smartest guy, but you can be, what you want to be is the guy or gal who makes everybody else feel amazing. And one of the best ways you can do is be the most interested and ask questions like, oh, wow, tell me about that. And what was that like? What was the best part? And it's super easy. Yeah. You don't have to be interesting. You don't have to have a whole bunch of amazing stories. But if you spend an hour or 30 minutes with a complete stranger and you just ask them a bunch of smart questions, they'll love you and it'll be amazing. And sometimes in the business setting, people just need to get it out of their head. They need to hear themselves say what's going on.
Yeah.
And sometimes they know what to do. They don't need a solution. They just need somebody to pull that stuff out.
We put on an event, we put on several, but one of the events I'm thinking of, one of my partners, Derek, had a conversation with somebody, and Derek will tell you in the hour conversation they have, Derek did nothing but ask questions. The other guy talked probably 57 of the 60 minutes or so, right? And then the rest of the week, this guy was bragging, because it was kind of like an event where in between sessions, people would share takeaways and all. And a couple times during the week, this guy got up and he just bragged about how he had the most life-changing conversation he's ever had with Derek, you know, and all Derek did was ask questions. And so there is power in that. And I think that's a good segue for obviously the business stuff, because everybody listening to this is building a team, you're dealing with people, you got your subcontractors, and you want, just like our spouses, you know, we want a connection with our people, right? And the more better relationship that you have, the less you're going to have profit leaks, the more efficient you're going to be. People will stay with you longer if they really feel heard and believed in. And so what you brought up there was that use more question marks, even with your team, right?
Absolutely. There's a couple of questions I recommend just deleting from your vocabulary when it comes to your team. And I learned this, I was brought in to run a company back in 2011 or 12. There were around 15 employees, and I didn't know how bad it was. I mean, it was just chaos. Mm-hmm. And cash flow was terrible. I joked that you could put a room full of monkeys and give them typewriters, and they could have come up with a better way to run a business than the way this was going. It was crazy. But I learned, we typically ask the wrong questions. We ask questions like, well, why didn't you? Or why can't you? Why don't we? Why don't you? Think about it. You don't want to know the answer to that question. If you're trying to get somebody to do something, don't ask them why they can't do it.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite questions is, what would it take? So what would it take to solve this? And that gets people in a future state. They're thinking, what would it take? And they're more solution oriented. And that was one of the things I did in that company. And that's what triggered me starting my podcast a long time ago and really taught me a lot of the tough lessons, is asking questions like, all right, what would it take to get out of this cash flow mess? What would it take to make things work? What would it take to be more profitable? And ultimately, that company grew to about 50 employees. And we tripled in revenue and probably doubled the net profit percentage. And I realized, it's not... a lot of it's not about the people. It really starts with the leader and the systems. Yeah. And the problems seem big and hairy and ugly and are incredibly painful, but they don't always have to be painful to solve. Sometimes the answer is pretty simple.
Well, I think sometimes as the leader, we feel like we're on an island and we have to figure it out by ourselves.
Yeah.
And I've found through the years, I mean, we went to Houston, I guess it was a week and a half ago now, my team and I, a couple weeks ago, whatever it was. And we needed to be in the same room for a few days, right? We had to iron some things out. And what's funny is I did the least amount of talking because my people are so damn smart. And I say my people, I don't mean I own them. But, they're our team, right? They're so... And I would just throw a question out and I would sit back, and it was amazing just to watch how they'd solve it. I had to take a call. I was out of the room and it was a long call. I was gone for about an hour. I came back in and I was like, anything I need to know? And they're like, no, we got it handled. I'm like, cool. And then we just went back in. And so I want to encourage people listening to this, like you're saying, don't be afraid to throw out a question to your team, because chances are the group think is way smarter than just the me think. And so a lot of good problems, or a lot of problems, can be solved. Profits go up when you really put the ball in their court, because they also have more ownership of it too.
Yeah, absolutely. I learned that lesson the hard way. I spent the first 18 years of my career thinking, I need to come up with a plan. I'm going to go to my office, go in the job trailer, close the door, come up with this plan, and then deliver it to the team and tell them, all right, this is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And what I found was that it's not about the plan. The plan is not the most important part. I think Eisenhower said something like, plans are useless, but planning is indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much about the plan you come up with. It's really about how you come up with the plan and who's involved. Because the half-assed plan that your team comes up with and they actually implement is way better than the perfect plan that you come up with and they resist because they weren't part of the development of it. So that's a big lesson. Yeah, you're exactly right. You're talking about your mm-hmm. offsite with your team. There's this myth that the leader has to come up with the plan. The leader has to jam it down everybody's throat. The leader has to enforce it. No. Your job is to get the right people in the room, ask the right questions, and then get out of the way. Let them do their thing.
Well, especially when you know yourself, right? Like I'm not like we talk about a DISC profile a lot in our world, right? D-I-S-C. D, for those that don't know, D is dominance, you know, type A, fast decisions, you know, on the attack, goal setter, destroys everything in its path to goal, reaching the goal, right? The high I is more influence, person, people, charismatic. Hell for them would be working in a cubicle alone, right? And then you have the S and the C, which are more, you know, steady and conscientious and more detail-oriented, lower risk tolerance, slower decision-making, blah, blah, blah. Dude, what I found was, and this killed our profits, and I know one of the things we're going to chat about today was profit bleed, right? And when I was the one coming up with the plan, I was the wrong guy doing that job because I don't naturally think in that way. I have the vision. And a turning point for me was I ran into a project once where we had this crazy deadline and just a ton of work to get done, like in a 3-day period, and brought the team together. My old business partner and I did too. And he's way more of a planner than I am. But we sat down, we brought all our crew leaders in. And I think we asked them a question, something like, guys, what do you think we need to do to be able to paint all these dorm rooms by noon on Monday? And it was like, it was a couple weeks prior. We were starting on a Friday and we had to be done by noon on Monday, right? And it was amazing to just watch the team take it from there, you know, because they're the boots on the ground. They're the ones, you know, and if I guarantee you, because I've done this in the past, I used to try to map out every little thing on a job because this whole being detail oriented was such head trash for me in a sense where I felt like I had to make that a strength. And what I've realized is I just need to now play to my strengths, and that's paint the vision, guide the culture, be a better leader, support them, and go, what do you all need? And once I got that, dude, it was crazy how profits stopped draining out of the back of the bus. You know, it was like, it's nuts when you get out of the way as a leader.
It's almost too good to be true. Mm-hmm. And people think, well, if I give up ownership, if I give up control, giving up control, that's this word, this mirage or this myth of control. And the reality is, you're actually, that control is getting in the way. And I've seen it over and over and over where people have delegated the right way and mistakes go down, profits go up, motivations, like my people suddenly are motivated to work. I'm like, well, no shit. It's because you've tapped into their motivation and it's there. They have all the motivation they need and you've just tapped into it. And it works. It just works. And I think it's, a lot of people talk about the productivity crisis and the skilled labor shortage. Well, what if we just tapped into the people we have? What if we could help everybody on the team be 10% more productive by tapping into their motivation, tap into the hearts and the minds of the people we have? I think we would probably solve a lot of our problems. And we would certainly solve the retention issue we have with the people leaving. So I think it's, a lot of people are looking out there for the solution. They think the problem is out there. They think the solution is out there somewhere. And I don't think it is. I think the answer is right in front of us. It's the people we have.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to start.
Dude, that's gold, because I'm just putting myself in the shoes of how probably many of our employees feel, those that listen to this and mine, the people have felt in the past, right? Where when you show up on a Monday morning and all you get is somebody telling you what to do and how to think and what to, you know, all, I don't care how you're wired. You, nobody wants that, you know, and there's no incentive for you to, like, you talked about the retention issue. I think people leave because they don't see a vision for where they can go in the company, right? And when you're that type of leader that's making all the decisions, telling everybody what to do, everyone else is just like, they check their brain at the door and they come in and they move this to this side of the room and they paint this thing or they fix this and then they go home. They don't, you know, back to Houston, on one of the sessions I did, it was a real short session, but I just shared my vision for the fight, the contractor fight, where we're going. I just said, it's been a while since we've all been in the same room. And I just want to share with you guys what I'm thinking. And at the top of it, There's a proverb, forget what the proverb number is and where it is, but it's in the book of Proverbs. And it basically says, when there's no vision, the people perish. Mm-hmm. And that hit me like a ton, but I put it on the top of that page because it just came to me one day. And I'm like, that's what my job is as a leader. I have to give the people vision. And dude, you've nailed it. When you have vision and you communicate it, you get out of the way, the things we've been talking about, the people right under your nose that you already have, they grow, they develop, and it's, and the net result, just the money game, is you're crushing it now. One of my partners said to me one time, we were talking about something, and I think I was being a doofus and arguing about whatever, and he looks at me, goes, dude, do you want to be right or you want to be rich?
Yeah.
You know, like, and in this case, do you want to call all the shots or do you want to have a kick-ass business making a lot of money that serves you and all your people in your community well? I don't know.
I'm convinced that the skilled labor shortage is a symptom of other underlying problems. It's not really the problem. Yeah, we have people who are retiring out, but I mean, if you look at the turnover rate, it's like, last time I looked at it, somewhere around 60% of construction workers change jobs every year. Either they retire, they quit, they get fired, but they change jobs 60%, 6 out of 10. That's worse than almost any other industry. And
wow,
that's a problem. Let's say, you know, there's folks like Mike Rowe out there. Let's say they bring in 400,000 people and they fill every single vacant job in the construction industry somehow across the country. Mm-hmm. Great, good. But what if 60% of them quit in the first year?
Yeah.
Then what? They're not coming back. All of those years of trade school and all of that hard work will be lost and they won't come back. So we've got a leaky bucket and mm-hmm. we don't need a bigger bucket. We don't need to put more water in the bucket. We don't need a bigger pump to fill up the bucket. We need to fix the holes in the bucket before we try to get more people in there. So it's a lot easier. You know, there's the silver bullet syndrome. Everybody is always looking for the silver bullet. Ah, if we could just find this one silver bullet, and it's mm-hmm. maybe it's trade schools. Maybe we need to go to middle school. And at some point, somebody's going to say, we need to meet mothers at their prenatal visit when they're having ultrasounds done. And we need to somehow indoctrinate this fetus with a desire for the skilled trades, right? I think it's easy to look out there. Like, well, they need to do something. The NAHB, the ABC, some acronym needs to do something about it. I think that the answer is right in front of us. Like, what are you going to do with your people? How are you going to lead your people well so you keep them? And I tell people, look, if you can build a great team and you can empower your people and you are a good leader, then you will not have trouble finding people. They will be attracted to you. They will find you if they get on board with your vision and they want to be part of something like what you're doing. You will absolutely crush the competition. Your customers will have a better experience and everything will just work. But the problem is in here. It's not out there.
So I know one of our topics today was how to shore up the profit leaks, right? Eliminating profit bleeds. Would you say that this is the number one bleed for people? What are your thoughts on that?
I think, here's what I found. After working with a lot of people over the past few years, most companies have good people. They don't need more people, but they have people who are frustrated, people who want to do a good job, but there's just something missing. So some of the problems don't seem to be related to the solutions. So in July, I spent a couple of days with a home builder doing $40 or $50 million worth of new homes. A couple of weeks ago, I went to Georgia and spent a couple of days with a custom home builder there. And I ask, what are the problems that you need to solve, right? So I hear things like, our customers are the problem, right? Our customers are doing this whole mom versus dad thing where they call me, or they just keep calling everybody on the team until they get the answer they want. And that causes problems. Or there's this barrage of communication. We're getting texts and emails, phone calls, and people get frustrated and they want to talk to me, the owner, right?
Yeah.
They won't talk to my people. My people, they business owners say things like, well, my people just won't take ownership. My people won't hold customers accountable. They're just walking all over us. Then they talk about things on their projects like, we can't get off projects. We have these nightmare punch lists. We can't get away from projects. We have schedule overruns, schedule delays. We're handcuffed to these jobs. We can't get away from them. And then there's like specific profit bleeds, like rework. We're doing things twice because of quality issues or the wrong thing got installed. There's the thing I hate the most, which I call unsolicited charity, where you do work for free. Mm-hmm. And they would happily pay you sometimes, but you just do it for free. And then when they talk about their team, there's the problem of who has the ball? Mm-hmm. Like, who's responsible for this? There are people stepping on each other's toes. There are things that are just falling through the cracks. Like, well, I thought you were going to call. And no, I thought you were going to order that. And oh, those windows mm-hmm. that we need next week, they're not coming in for 16 weeks because if two people pointing at each other. So there's this, who's responsible for it? And these are common, like especially companies that are growing.
Yep.
Right. There seems to be this unprecedented demand. So people come to me and they say, I need to train my people, or I need different people, or I don't really know what to do, but I've got all of these problems. These are pretty consistent. I was thinking about this, like, what are the high leverage activities, right? The picture that came to my mind is dominoes, but where you have one small domino that tips up against a larger domino that tips up against a larger domino, and pretty soon it's knocking over this 6 foot tall domino.
Right.
What are the things you start with so you get maximum leverage if you're dealing with these kind of problems? And the first thing is some of what we've talked about here, and I know you talk a lot about thinking differently. You've got to think differently. You have to stop thinking of yourself as the only person in your company who could do something. And you have to stop thinking of yourself as the person who has to, like, I have to do all the selling. I have to, I have to be the best. I have to be the only. And you got to realize that you're the lid, you're the bottleneck in your organization. And you got to start thinking differently. You got to start thinking about, how can I work myself out of a job? Mm-hmm. Right? How do I get out of my own way? You've got to start thinking what I call right to left thinking. Most people think we're going to start the job and then we'll just take things as they come and see how it shakes out. And that just doesn't work, especially if you want to grow an organization. So you have to think right to left. Go out to the right side of the page. Think, where do I want to be 2 years from now? Mm-hmm. And then let's work right to left. If you want to double your revenue in 2 years, that's not just going to happen organically. Right. So go out there and say, all right, I want to do double my revenue in 2 years. What do you have to do? What does your organization need to look like? How many leads do you need? How many people do you need to do the work? And you work from right to left. And then you put systems in place to make that happen, right? Goals are great, but frankly, don't work all that well unless you've got a system to back them up. So the first thing, this is something I just realized probably in the last 6 months, is you've got to design your organization for the future. A lot of these problems that we talked about, customer communication, why people aren't taking ownership, customers are walking all over us, nobody's accountable for things. It comes down to you as the leader have not designed your organization. You haven't clearly established whose lane is this? What are the lanes? Whose lane is it? And who's responsible for it? Doing that that's probably the first big domino.
You know, it's funny. I said I needed to get my team in the room together. And that's why we went to Houston, because we're all over the country, right? And so the fight has grown so quickly that we were having some of that. Like, I thought this was yours. I thought this was yours. And getting everyone in the room and they solved the problem for the most part, we're good there. And what I found, you brought up the domino thing and leverage, like we want leverage. What I walked out of there with was the realization that the number one thing I can do in my organization right now to create leverage and drive the business forward is have a 30-minute coaching call with each person on my team once a week. That's the one thing. It's not creating more content. It's not doing more interviews. It's not even me coaching. It is me coaching, it's me coaching, but me spending that time with my people. And when I look back in other companies I've run and grown and things like that, it's funny that you can work your ass off to a point, but what got you there isn't going to get you to the next spot, right? And so every company I've had that's grown and done well, I reached that point where my number one job turned into raising up and developing other leaders. And so that's something I think that, you know, people need to hear more of. And with a lot of growth comes that chaos. And so you have to have that time where you get people all in the same room and go, all right, what are we doing here? Because to me, that's probably the number one profit bleed in the companies I've had is we're not dialed in with who's doing what and things are falling through the cracks. And we're not all working in our area of brilliance, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're exactly right. This is where a lot of people, they become the lid on their organization because they think, well, I have to do more to grow. Like, what you need to do is empower your people and right. Think leverage. How can you multiply your strengths? Well, it's by bringing good people in and then empowering them. And you'll actually get more done while doing less yourself mm-hmm. by empowering your people. So yeah, that's a big mindset shift there.
You brought up, you know, you want to work yourself out of a job, right? And I love it. And you've probably had this with people you've coached. They reach a point where they'll say to me, dude, I don't know what to do each day now. Like I had one guy call me up first time, it was many years ago. He called me up and goes, dude, I'm bored. I go, what do you mean? He's like, I don't know what to do. It's just running itself. This is pretty cool, you know? And so we had conversations about how to spend his time, but that's what you want. You want to make yourself irrelevant in your business for the most part.
Yeah. Some people do.
Yeah.
Maybe some people want to be, they want to be the guy in the middle and they need that. And I think you bring up a really good point. Like, what if you succeed, right? Mm-hmm. You should be prepared to succeed at this and have something else to do because I've seen it. If you don't have something to do, when you get bored, then you could just create these fires that need to be put out. Yep. You're like, you know what? I like being in reactive mode, so I'll just let this stuff burn and maybe even carry around cans of gasoline so I can scratch, I can pat myself on the back for being a great firefighter. So
yeah.
Prepare for success and have something else to do. Real estate development, philanthropy, go start another business,
right?
Travel, something. But it's good to have something else to do. Plan for what if it actually works?
I don't know if other people are picking up on this as we're talking, but I'm going to point it out. You have a really good way about you about asking questions. Like, and that's what the most successful people do is they ask better questions. So if you're listening to this, rewind it. You'll notice that through this conversation, Todd, you've been asking these questions and even the examples you've given with the companies you've been with and things like that, you're like, you approached it with a question. You owned your own shit with a question. And that shows a confidence and a humility that I think is needed in a leader. So anyway, I was just an observation, nothing more than that, man. That's, you know, one of my right-hand guy in the fight, Neil, he has a podcast that he started not too long ago. It's a daily show. It's under like 2 minutes a day. It's called the Big Ask Question of the Day, where he just throws a question out, doesn't even give an answer, just like, hey, I was just thinking about this today, blah, blah, blah. And that's it. You know, and I don't know if you know who Tony Robbins' buddy, Keith Cunningham. You ever heard of him? It's a guy named Keith Cunningham. He's this old business guru guy. He wrote a book called The Road Less Stupid about running business. And the biggest thing, takeaway I got from his book and hearing him on interviews, and you reminded me of him, was at least 2 to 3 times a week, he has like what he calls his thinking time, where for like 1 hour, he sits in the same exact chair with the same exact notebook and pen and this and that, no disruptions. And he writes a question at the top of the notepad. And he simply ponders that question for no less than 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And he says that's when the most growth comes in his life and his business and stuff. Like one of the questions he asked was, he says, just write this down and just jot down your thoughts was, what if you still had every customer that's ever worked with you? And there's no agenda there. It's just like, it's just a question, just an example. And the examples that he gave of what came to his mind with that sparked other ideas for retention of his clients and all this other stuff. And it's pretty cool. So anyway, dude, you just reminded me of Keith Cunningham there. So
I think that's his name. That's,
yeah, there you go. But yeah, check out The Road Less Stupid. It's a real easy read, but he just has, and I think at the end of each chapter, I don't know where the book is. It's over there somewhere. He just spoon feeds you some questions to ponder, you know?
And I've learned in conversations, in just probably just about anything other than public speaking, right? Mm-hmm. If you're talking to a group, asking questions the whole time may not be that effective, but the rest of the time, I just try to ask questions. I coached a high school volleyball team this fall. I tried to ask good questions. I've just learned that asking questions it's a superpower, and most people just want to talk. And if they would just ask questions, in the context of what we're talking about with your team, asking good questions, like, what would it take to save 15 minutes a day?
Yep.
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably have some ideas. And you know what? If you say, that's a great idea, what do you need to make that happen? They'll probably follow it and they'll probably implement it because it was their idea. More questions you can ask, and the better the questions, like the calibrated questions, right? You mentioned mirroring, which is a Chris Voss technique. If you want to learn how to ask great questions, how to negotiate, really how to influence people, Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. I've listened to it, read it 2 or 3 times.
Likewise.
Chock full of gold.
Yeah, it's... I used one of his techniques at an airport, at a car rental thing once, and totally, it worked. But anyway.
So profit bleeds, a couple of high leverage activities. First of all, you got to start thinking differently about yourself and your role in the company. You need to design your organization for the future. What are the major functions of your business? Like sales separate from marketing? Is design separate from sales? HR separate from finance? Like design your organization. Let's say you're going to build a multi-phase building, right? You're going to build a parking garage, and then 2 or 3 years later, you're going to build an aquarium on top of it, and then something else. You can't go back and modify those foundations very easily. So when they do that, they build the foundation first for the future growth.
Yep.
And it's the same way with the business. Put the foundations in place. Understand where you want to go. And when I say design your organization, I'm talking about, where do you want to be 2 years from now? Not what does it look like today? No, not how do you solve the dumpster fires you're dealing with, but think 2 years down the road, what do I want? Design your organization for the future. And that's huge, because one of the biggest problems is, who's got the ball? Is it me?
Yeah.
Is it you? And one of the best things you can do for your team is answer that question, and then help them answer the other question they have, which is, what does winning look like? All right, I'm accountable for this, sales or operations or finance or whatever it is, but what does winning look like? And if you can do that as a leader, that's huge, because most people don't. All they do is, they don't know. So nobody knows. But if you'll just clearly establish, like, okay, this is what you're accountable for, this is what winning looks like over this year, over this month, for the next 2 weeks, if you'll do that, you may be amazed at the response and how much smarter and more ownership your people start taking when you do that. And it really wasn't about them. It was about you.
Yep. Yep. Well, it's like you talking 2 years out or whatever it is, that's what it means to, you go grab your future and you bring it to today is really what's happening here. And you start making decisions and acting like you're that company 2 years from now. Maybe you're $1 million now and you want to be $5 million in 2 years, right? Start acting like a $2 million or a $5 million company, you know? And I think, you know, you were talking about the dominoes. Like this, what's funny, not funny, because you and I know this already, but for those listening, you know, many people go to tactical things for those first dominoes, you know, and we're talking bigger questions, different questions, more strategic questions than tactical. Mm-hmm. Because once you can change your thinking, great shit happens, you know, and the profit bleed is minimized greatly in a lot of ways because of the way you approached it. You didn't approach it tactically.
Yeah. And definitely some big picture kind of strategic things, and definitely thinking differently is got to be the first step, because a lot of these things won't work if you don't think differently, if you don't believe they're possible, or if you don't believe it, you can delegate things to people. It's just never going to work. So definitely have to think big picture, think for the future. One of the things that is a little bit tactical that what I found will eliminate the vast majority of profit bleeds. So like profit, if we talk about profit bleeds, some of the big ones are schedule delays on the front end. We can't get projects started. Schedule overruns on the back end, where we can't get away from projects and get to the next one. Rework, lost productivity, stolen time, downtime, shop time, lost time, drive time, all this poor productivity issues, unsolicited charity, doing work for free. Those are a handful of some of the worst profit bleeds. And it's when I have calls with people, one of the questions that I ask them is, all right, tell me about how bad this profit bleed is. And it's not unusual for small businesses, contractor doing $1.5 million in revenue a year, when they'll have three profit bleeds that are costing them $8,000 a month.
Yep.
96 grand. These could be six digit profit bleeds a year. And they're not looking at them because they don't really show up on an invoice, but they're absolutely hammering their bottom line. So if somebody said, Todd, I want you to get on a plane, we have profit bleeds, and they hung up the phone, and that's all they told me, then I would go to their office, meet with their team, and I would say, all right, let's talk about the handoff from the office to the field, because this is where 80% of the profit bleeds live. Is if you can solve the handoff, it could be most of the time it's the handoff from the office to the field. Sometimes it's the handoff from sales to design, but every project is a series of handoffs in a larger organization. If you're doing everything yourself, there's not really a handoff. But if you have a team, then go focus on nailing the handoff. And here's what I would advise you to do. Get your team together and say, all right, well, first of all, let's come up with everything that you need to consider a project ready to build.
Yeah.
And you get the team involved, and you'll come up with a list of activities, and then you can ask questions like, okay, what are we missing here? What about this? There may be some things that you could do that you're not doing. And you develop this handoff checklist, and then have an actual handoff meeting and a formal discipline handoff. Just like I think of it as, think about the last time you closed on a loan. If you bought a piece of real estate,
yep,
there are 32 stipulations on that loan. You're like, yeah, you know what, Joan, the title company, we covered 31 of them. That's good enough, right? We'll pick up the other one afterward. What are they going to say? Like, nope, we're not closing today.
Yeah.
And that's how a discipline handoff needs to be. The superintendent or project manager, the crew leader on the field needs to be able to say, we're missing two things. Push it back across the table. Because if you'll do that, if the people in the field have 100% of the information they need, the productivity will go through the roof. A lot of these profit bleeds will go away. They will spend less time circling back, trying to fill in the gaps and asking questions. The customers will know exactly what's going on. They'll know who has the ball, because the customer won't feel like they have to call the project manager, the superintendent, the office manager, the company owner, because that person in the field has the ball. They have everything they need. So if you'll do that, this is where I tell people, you don't have to document every process in your business. If you'll just have a clearly defined handoff process, a lot of this chaos and a lot of the profit bleeds just magically go away.
I love your analogy of the closing paperwork, right? You buy a house and it's like, sign this and go over this and you sign this initial here, blah, blah, blah. That's what this is. And, you know, don't overcomplicate it. And the other big thing was, and we did this a million years ago. We gave our foreman, our crew leaders, permission to say, no, I'm not starting the job if they didn't have everything they wanted.
Yes.
And that's where you, not you, Todd, but you as a leader have to get out of the way. You have to give your people that authority to tell you, no, I'm not starting the job because you didn't do your job and get me everything I need. You know, if I don't have a clear scope of work, if I don't, you know, whatever it is, like you said, slide that paper back and go, I'll wait.
Right. I did a hospital addition 20 years ago, and it required a state building inspector. And I scheduled this guy, and I knew I wasn't quite done. You know, I was close. And he showed up. I walked around with him. He was in this building for 5-10 minutes. He just walked, never stopped. We walked back out the same door. He looked at me and he said, "Call me when you're done." And he got back in his car. So,
lesson learned.
Received. So yeah, same thing. Yeah. You let me know when you're done. I need this selection. There are 87 things on this list and you have 86, but this is our process. This is how we win. And everybody has to have the ability to hold the other side accountable. And then on the flip side, when somebody back in the office gets a phone call from the guy in the field saying, "Hey, can you look this up for me?" They can say, "It's in your handoff packet." "Yeah, I know, but like, it's you have everything you need. Mm-hmm. Let me know what you come up with. And did you look there?" So yeah, setting clear lanes, holding each other accountable, makes a lot of the chaos go away. And one of the interesting side effects is it will smoke out the C and D players in your team. Mm. You won't have to fire them.
Yeah.
They'll leave because there's nowhere to hide and they don't like accountability. They like to hide. So be forewarned, if you start doing this, if you start holding people accountable and putting processes in place, you should probably start recruiting first. Yeah. Because there's a pretty good chance you're going to lose some people. Every time I've done it, that's what happens. So there's one more thing. Like there's one more big high leverage activity. This is really specific to builders, remodelers, light general contractors, maybe even anybody who's doing design work, selections for their clients. Now, everything else we've talked about works for 100% of businesses, especially definitely all construction businesses. This last one is specifically for builders, remodelers, general contractors, maybe not for all trades. But when I looked at these profit bleeds and I started doing a root cause analysis and asking, like, why is this happening? What's the real problem here? There were two words that popped up for these specific types of people, and it was free estimates. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. So I did a lot of research, talked to a lot of people. There's this interesting little secret. This hidden secret is that there are people, builders, remodelers, general contractors, getting paid to do pre-construction work. They're getting paid for estimates. They're not talking about it, but it's the secret sauce for their business. And there are a whole lot of other people talking about how they have to do free estimates. It's impossible to get paid for estimates. But I'm telling you, if you fall into that category, one of the best things you can do is end the practice of free estimates. I interviewed a guy who made this switch. He made the switch about a year ago, really started doing it in January. And his name's Bobby Williams. He's in Plainfield, Indiana. He does about $1.5 million worth of remodeling every year. I asked him the question, what was the biggest change you've made in your business? Like, what's the thing you really feel like you've cracked the code on? And he said, without hesitation, it's the pre-construction services agreement. Yep. He said, we've collected $50,000 in the first 8 months of this year to do estimates. And the other big change was, he said, we know exactly what our numbers are. We need to have 400 opportunities to get down to the certain number of jobs that we need. He said, before we were doing 400 estimates, 400 scopes of work, and not getting paid for any of it. And he said, now we need to do 80, and we're getting paid for it. We're wasting less time, which frees up all of this other time to spend time hiring and recruiting and networking and training people and sharpening the saw. So getting paid for estimates is one of the benefits of it, but it's like number 5, 6, or 7 on the list of reasons to do it. It's an absolute game changer. It revolutionizes the businesses of home builders and remodelers and even small general contractors who do it. And it seems impossible. It seems like crazy talk, but people are doing it. And it's really time. It's in everybody's best interest to end the practice of free estimates.
Well, you weed out the tire kickers. You attract a higher quality of client.
Absolutely.
And the goal, you know, because in our sales training, you know, we have a process called Shin Fu, and we have step five, we call the BS meter, which is the consultation fee. And we got painters and flooring guys and this charging a $500 consultation fee to run out and tell somebody the same thing they fucking told them on the phone. All right. So the goal, we always tell them, the goal is not the $50,000 that your guy collected. Your goal is to spend your time only with the people that are going to write you a freaking deposit check and be the right customer for you. And that's what, whenever I see you and I are on the same page with this free estimate thing, I'm like, I'd rather stick my junk in the door and slam it than go do a free estimate for somebody. And yet you nailed it. You're like, so many contractors feel like they have to play that game. And Todd, what I love about this, when you're charging for an estimate and you're, you know, pre-construction agreement and all that other stuff, you are differentiating. Like, and that's what it, that you are positioning yourself as a higher dollar contractor just with that practice, that we don't play in the mud like everybody else. We respect our time and all that other stuff, and we respect your time. So I want people to see this. Sorry, my dogs are barking up there. I want people to see this from a marketing perspective. You are differentiating. You are. This is a way that you can add more value to somebody before they ever hire you. So anyway, man, what are a couple things before we wrap up? What are a couple things with that agreement that you recommend? How does somebody who's never done this, say they're a remodeler, they're doing $500,000 a year, they want to grow their business, what are some things you would tell that person that needs to come out of their mouth with their next client or potential client?
The number one hurdle is in between the ears, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I had somebody send me an email and they said, you know, I want to charge for estimates, but I can't see somebody paying me for that on a small job. And my response was, you're probably right. If you can't see it, if you think it's impossible, you're never going to try it and you will never see it. So the thing that you've got to get over is the thing you've got to understand is the value to the customer, right? Most people would say, yeah, I get it. I get the value to me. But how do I sell somebody on it? What are the words that I actually say?
Right.
And the key to that is understanding the value to them. Everybody's favorite radio station is WIIFM. What's in it for me? Right. That's what, when you're talking about something, they're thinking, or what's in it for me? What's in this for me? Why are we, let's talk about me, right? What's in it for me? That's what they're asking. So there are actually three questions that you can ask, right? It's not even, doesn't talk about you, doesn't talk about your time. It doesn't talk about, doesn't anything about you. It's about them. There are three questions you can ask them that will get them to see the value in paying you, not only for the estimate, but for pre-construction work. And I would say, especially now with the way the supply chain is, with lead times and availabilities and price changes, it's never been more valuable. So there's three questions. I put together a video. I can share the link if that's okay, where people can go if you want to get these three questions. And I think the title of it is something like, what are three questions you can ask your next prospect so they'll want to pay for an estimate? I got an email from one guy who heard me talking about this, and he was on the way to an appointment. He's a remodeling contractor. On the way, heard me talk about it, used a couple of these questions, got a check for $2,500.
Yeah.
For a pre-construction agreement. So if you want to get your hands on these three questions, and here's what I would say, like, don't give out another free estimate until you watch this video. It's 15 minutes or so, but you can go to buildermasterclass.com/script, buildermasterclass.com/script. And yeah, you'll hear from at least one guy named Travis Gardner, who collected a surprising amount his first year. And find out what his biggest hurdle was. Yeah,
that's good stuff, man.
That's one of the biggest. Man, if you're a small home builder, general contractor, remodeler, and you want to grow your business so you can get out of the field, get off the tools, make the jump to the office, that's the biggest thing that'll revolutionize your business.
So, you know, you think about this, for those that are listening going, I can't do this, and you're in your head about it. This is one of the reasons, and I will tell you right now, we've actually tracked this. You will save at least 50% of your estimating time. Whatever you're spending now, it will at least be cut in half doing what Todd's saying here, okay? And that's where your time is. Like, everybody's like, I don't have time. There's too much to do in the business. I don't have time to have a company meeting. I don't have time to train my guys. I don't have blah, blah, blah. I don't have time. I don't have time to market, blah, blah, blah. It's because you're spending crazy amounts of time pecking away at your freaking, you know, computer and doing research on pricing and all this other bullshit for jobs that you're never going to get. So I'm just trying to give people another perspective here, Todd. Like, this is why you feel, and I'll tell you what's funny, so many guys are like, I need to hire another office person. I need to hire this. I need to hire that. I'm like, no, you need to stop running around for free.
Yes.
And rope that in, and you will be amazed at how much more time that you have and how much more money you make. So get out of your damn heads. This can be done. There are thousands and thousands of contractors that are doing this right now, and a lot are in your own area and your industry. Trust me. So
you live in a small town. Like, the questions I get are, how can I do this when everybody else in my little town gives them out for free? And I asked this to Bobby Williams. I said, what would you say to those people? He would say, do you want to be like everybody else? Do you want to compete with them? Like, do you want to be the best at giving out free estimates? Or do you want to differentiate yourself? Do you want to be the only one providing a valuable service? And I'm telling you, once you understand the value to the client, once you figure out what you, here's the reality, you may watch this video and realize, oh shit, I'm the problem. I have been screwing my customers over by giving them free estimates. Like, all these problems that they're having on my projects and the profit bleeds and the experience, it comes back to what you said when you were on my podcast. Like, 100% of your problems are you.
Yeah.
And you may have to hug that porcupine that's uncomfortable with and realize you're doing your customers a favor. By charging for estimates. That's what you're going to realize. And when you do that, hell, it's easy. It's easy to throw a life jacket to somebody who's drowning, right? Because there's something in it for them. So when you get convinced of the value, it won't be hard for you to sell.
Well, and here's another thing. This just came to me. It was probably several years ago now. It was 2015, 16, maybe. I think I wrote an article about how all estimates actually should be free. Meaning, when you look up the definition of the word estimate, it's an approximation. It's a ballpark. Okay, so for those that are listening, if you just even want to change the terminology and somebody says to you, hey, do you give free estimates? Yeah, what are you looking at building? I'm looking at building a garage such and such size, blah, blah, blah. That'll be between, I don't know, $180,000 and $200,000. You just gave a free estimate. Okay? One of the things I started doing one of my companies years ago is we call it a pricing promise. If you're going to ask me to sit down and peck away and research and gather all this info and create this scope of work that we're going to deliver, that's the promise of what we're going to deliver the job on and the price and all that other stuff, minus unforeseen conditions, blah, blah, blah. Okay. That's what you're getting paid for, guys. Okay. Like, flip the switch in your head. Maybe that'll help. I know it's helped some other people that I've talked to about this. They're like, so when a customer says, Todd, do you guys give free estimates? You go, yeah, what are you looking at doing? Oh, that'll be around, that's a free estimate. Oh, I thought you were going to come out and type something up. No, that's our pricing promise. That's not free. You know? So, I don't know.
That's a great point. There are like three different levels of precision with an estimate, right? There's the estimate, the wet finger in the air based on historicals. And they haven't selected anything. It hasn't even been designed yet. How could you possibly give them an estimate that they can build from? So you got to think about what do you need to get to the next step in the process? Well, you need some ballpark estimates to see if there's a budget fit. And then there's all these other things you need. What you need is to figure out your needs assessment. What do you need to be in this project? What is it going to cost? What are the selections that you're actually going to put in there? What are the appliances, the cabinets, the trim, the flooring? What do you want this thing to actually look like? And there's no way you can do all that stuff for free. Or you shouldn't be. Unfortunately, there are too many people doing full design selections, spending 40, 50 hours for free on an estimate. I did it back when I was building houses, and it's just not going to work, right? You're going to have all sorts of problems. So yeah, ask the question, like, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you really need in order to make a decision. You just want a number on a piece of paper? Here's the question that I would ask people. This is in that video. When do you want to find out how much your project is going to cost and what you're going to get? In the middle of the project or before you get started? And most people are going to say, well, I'd like to know exactly what I'm going to get and how much it'll cost before I get started.
Yeah.
Well, we can't do that for free. And you don't want us to do that for free. So that's why we need to get started with the pre-construction agreement.
One of the questions I would always ask people, and I think this tees up beautifully with what you're talking, is, you know, if you called me up, I want to get a price and estimate on this, that, or the other thing. A question something like this: Todd, what part of the buying process are you in right now? Like, where are you at? Are you just kind of gathering some info for a project you want to do down the road? Or are you ready to pull the trigger on this thing immediately? And then shut your mouth. And they will tell you, a lot of times people will be like, oh, my son graduates college in a year and a half, and then we're not going to be paying for college anymore. And we wanted to finally do the addition or put the swimming pool in or whatever, you know? So then it's like, oh, so would it make sense just to have kind of a rough conversation about what something like this might talk? And this is where the marketing and the content on your website and adding value through your content over that year and a half period of time nurtures that relationship. And Todd, I think a lot of guys don't ask a question like you just shared or I shared, and they assume they want this big, crazy, detailed thing, and they just jump right in with the good intentions of wanting to provide a good service and make it easy for people and stuff. So, and again, you end up wasting a lot of your time on the wrong people at the wrong time as well. So it might be the right person, wrong time to do that too.
Yeah. I had one of my clients built screen enclosures, pool enclosures in Jacksonville, Florida. And he thought he was ready to pull the trigger and hire two more salespeople. And then he realized, oh, we don't need more salespeople. We just need to ask better questions when the phone rings.
Right.
Like, are you looking for a ballpark budget number or a detailed estimate? And then they would say, oh, we just want a ballpark number. And so he could have his actual salespeople spending time with qualified leads. It really came down to qualification, just a few simple questions, tweaking the process. And he avoided hiring two salespeople, which, say, a salesperson's $40,000-$50,000 a year, something like that. And he just cut all of that overhead by asking the right questions at the right time. Yeah.
Yeah. So his focus needed to be on training whoever was answering the phone. You know, and again, this comes back to asking good questions, right? Like, what would need to happen and blah, blah, blah. And that's how you got him there. So, well, dude, this has been good. I want to drop some links, man. How can people reach out to you? And I know we'll put the links in the show notes if they miss it here. But as always, I enjoy shooting the breeze with you and all that stuff. Share that link for that video again and then where people can find you and listen to your show and all that stuff too.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. It's always a blast. So my main website is constructionleadingedge.com. You can check out my podcast, which is The Construction Leading Edge. Just search for that on whatever your podcast player of choice is. And then if you are intrigued by this idea of getting paid for estimates, maybe you want to prove me wrong. Like, if you think it's impossible, I challenge you to watch this video. Or if you're like, oh man, I got to do this, you can get those three questions that will help, that you can ask your prospect on your next appointment to help them see the value and get them to say, yep, I get it. This is why I should pay for an estimate. You can go to buildermasterclass.com/script.
I love it. Yeah. Prove them wrong. It's funny you bring that up because we talk about that all the time. We share with people like, all right, you think we're full of shit? Try it for a month.
Yeah.
Okay. Go all in for a month. What are you going to lose? You're not going to lose anything. I promise you. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's always a pleasure, man. I enjoy it. I appreciate what you're doing. Thanks a lot.
Likewise, man. All right, everybody, check out the show notes below. Go check out the stuff that Todd's got there for you. Give his podcast a listen. Share it with somebody else as well. And until next time. Thanks for being here. We're out.